At last week's Talmud class, Wes shared the riveting story of San Francisco 49ers' big bet that went awry and the unexpected triumph that mistake enabled. Long story short, they believed that Trey Lance was going to be their superstar, so much that they traded 3 first-round draft picks to move up in the draft. As an afterthought, they drafted a guy named Brock Purdy, who, as last picked, not just to their team, but to the entire NFL draft that year, meant that draft tradition bestowed upon him the nickname Mr. Irrelevant. Lance, as we know now, did not work out, and Purdy led his team all the way to last Sunday's Super Bowl. Wes drew the poignant lesson from this that we can't always or even often know what we're going to get when we first say yes to something. His class, which I highly recommend, focused on the first part of this story, of our Na'ase V'Nishma moments, the we'll do it and then we'll figure it out times and commitments of our lives. But as I walked out of class last Wednesday, and on Sunday as I watched the Super Bowl with friends, and all week since, the unspoken second part of that story just wouldn't go away. It raised a question for me. How does Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, become Brock Purdy, Super Bowl contender? Not just technically, but emotionally. Can you imagine what it must have felt like to be labeled Mr. Irrelevant? To go to event after event as he did, just to be roasted. According to my daughter, there's a whole phenomenon on social media of girls who got excited about the Super Bowl, not because of the football or even because of Taylor Swift, but because of how bad they felt for Brock Purdy. How does one not internalize the stings of Mr. Irrelevant, but use it as fuel instead? That's not just a football question. If you ever stood on the elementary school blacktop when they were choosing up sides for a game, you know exactly what I mean. Remember that pit in your stomach? Even if you weren't all that bad, that internal voice going, don't let me be last, don't let me be last, don't let me be last. If a contest were held for the sight of the most fervent prayers, the Rabbi Samuel Chiel Sanctuary or the playground blacktop, it might be a close call. Of course, somebody had to be last. But if it wasn't a one-off, if last defined you, what does that do to your neshama? Do you keep playing with joy? Or do you conclude that maybe this just isn't my thing? Off the playing field, too, for those of us who might have taken longer to find a spouse, gone on 1,000 dates, watched friend after friend partner up while we're still waiting, or perhaps put in long, intense hours, day after day, but when it's time for a promotion, it passes you by. Or had a dream that others discouraged. Sure, be an actor, but make sure to get your MBA first. How hard is it to keep on pushing Where do we find the resilience? How do we not just get worn down? That matters, not just in our personal sphere, but in our communal as well. With all of the stresses and strains of each day's searing news, from war in Israel to tragedy in Kansas City to our own school district still working on healing right here in Newton. How do we find the energy to keep hoping? Our Parsha today, which at first glance is one of the more monotonous, actually gives us a powerful playbook. First, in a blink and you might miss it moment among a thousand small details, is one of the Torah's most glorious verses. Ve'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. They shall make for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell bitocham, which can mean, for the grammar geeks among us, either among them or within them. If it means among them, well, there's not much to see here. But if it means within them, not to mix sports metaphors, but it is a biblical field of dreams. In other words, in order to experience greatness, in order to reap the payoff, we have to build a space for greatness to inhabit. The first ingredient in Brock Purdy's simple secret sauce is ignore the haters. Put your head down. Do the hard work. Build what you dream of building. And yet, even so, that nickname, Mr. Irrelevant, that's a whole lot of negative energy. While Major League sports players in general are not known for their tremendous humility, even someone with ample self-esteem might have found that that hurt. And not that it's the main point, but think about it. If school kids anywhere in America were to bestow the moniker Mr. Irrelevant, they would be sent straight to the principal's office for being a schoolyard bully. Which brings us to the second helpful touch point that our Parsha provides. All those times when whatever we're feeling, whatever we're going through feels impossible to do, and when we feel the sting of others who are quick to agree that it's impossible, it would help to remember that we don't actually have to tackle our challenges alone. No matter how great Moses was, when it came time to build the Mishkan, he invites kol ish asher yidvenu libo, every person whose heart inspires them to be a part of that endeavor, each one bringing their own unique gift. And while it's certainly true there were plenty who were delighted to make Brock Purdy a punchline, there were also Yidvenu Libo, those who were ready to believe in him, to work with him, to dream with him. It may not always be easy for those of us who don't have a built-in professional sports team around us to see those folks, but if we search, we may be surprised by those who were just waiting for us to ask, to invite them in. When you're feeling weary, when you're feeling embattled or belittled, pull a Moses. Invite someone in to share your load. Or if it's not immediately obvious who might help you, lift your unique skills to help someone else. That too can renew. Finally, it's easy to read Brock Purdy as a Cinderella tale of going from rags to riches, from Mr. Irrelevant to Super Bowl starting quarterback. But if you haven't been hiding under a rock, you know that Brock Purdy's team didn't win the Super Bowl. Watching him interviewed after the loss, I was struck that he could have said, "What do you expect? Last picked, right here." Or, "Give me some credit. Will you look at how far I've come? Look how far we've come." Instead, he reflected somberly on opportunities missed and the work that is still left to do. When asked, he replied that he'll focus on bringing the team back again. The timeless wisdom that his coach gave him back when he was the first time around last picked is every bit as true today. It doesn't matter how you get there, it's what you do when you get there. That is perhaps the most important thing our Parsha teaches, coming as it does in a particularly strange detail. Verse after verse instructs our ancestors to build with gold and beautiful decorations, but they're in the middle of a wilderness. Where did they get all that gold? Why did they bring it with them in the first place on what would turn out to be a 40-year schlep through the sand? What could they have possibly been thinking? I wouldn't have brought it, would you? Well, if you remember back a few chapters, you might recall that the gold was from Egypt, and they brought it at the conclusion of their slavery. Now, no one would have chosen to be a slave. Most of us would not choose our suffering. But gold from Egypt made into a holy sanctuary stands for the proposition that life is about what we do with what we've been through. Our ancestors built a sanctuary. Brock Purdy started in the Super Bowl. What will you do with what you've been through? Which brings me to one more stadium story. This time, not the Super Bowl, but the stadiums played thousands of times by rock star Billy Joel. He packed in audiences, prolifically producing and charting song after song, until he didn't. For 30 years, Billy Joel didn't release a single pop song. And that wasn't an accident. The last song on his last album back in 1993 was titled "Famous Last Words." Closing the book on his composing career, he crooned, "These are the last words I have to say before another age goes by. With all those songs I'll have to play, ain't that the story of my life?" You might think that with these words, he was riding off into the sunset for a well-deserved retirement after a long and lustrous career. After all, what more could he hope to achieve? But that's not what he did. He kept performing his old material. He just stopped producing something new. And in a recent interview, he shared why. He confided, "I kind of suffer with songwriting." And he shared that he's self-conscious of his voice and he doesn't like to hear himself sing. Even when he did write, he thought someone else, Adele perhaps, could sing what he wrote better. And that would have been that. Except for one man named Freddie Wexler, who made it his mission to meet and befriend Billy Joel. An unlikely friendship, Freddie was, in Billy's words, relentless, and finally convinced him to record, to write, for the first time in 30 years. And Billy reflects on this important gift that this friendship gave him. He says, "Freddie got me to find the joy in it again." The song that he wrote lit up the music charts, and it is appropriately called "Turn the Lights Back On." In it, he offers a powerful anthem for all who feel at times like our own version of Mr. Irrelevant. He sings, "And maybe you love me. Maybe you don't. Maybe you'll learn to. And maybe you won't. You've had enough. But I won't give up." May we never give up. When challenged, may we put our head down and focus on what we need to build. May we reach out to those around us who can be our MVPs. And may we use the hard-earned bruises of our past to fuel our future. However you are, wherever you've been, whatever your dream, from the Super Bowl to the simple, our world needs you, especially now. Turn the lights back on. Shabbat shalom.